Chapter 3. Everest, 1933. London, Friday, January 20th, 1933. Liverpool Street Station was a madhouse. Surrounded by a mob of family, friends, and well-wishers, the climbers had planned to slip discreetly into their carriages on the train to the Tilbury docks. But once the bright flashes of the newspapermen's cameras lit up the red brick walls and iron rafters of the Victorian-era railway terminal, waves of excitement raced through the station. Bobbies and baggage handlers shouted encouragement, while schoolchildren, bank assistants, and shop clerks stood in wide-eyed wonder. It wasn't every day, mind you, that one laid eyes on the best of the best, the heroic Englishmen who would soon be standing on the top of Mount Everest. It wasn't every day that one saw history in the making. A bystander, seized by patriotic fervor, even presented expedition member Colin G. Crawford, a seasoned Himalayan mountaineer who had climbed with Mallory back in 24, with an umbrella. The weather, the gift giver explained, might get bad in Tibet. Despite the chaotic send-off, the 1933 British Mount Everest expedition was the largest, most highly organized, and best-equipped mountaineering campaign in human history. A crack team of 12 climbers, including an Olympic pentathlete, an Arctic explorer, and veterans of previous Himalayan climbs, had been carefully selected by the Mount Everest Committee. More than 5,000 pounds, a hefty sum in the early 1930s, had been raised outright, while the remaining 8,000 to 10,000 pounds necessary to fund the expedition had been covered through the sale of exclusive news and photographic rights to the Daily Telegraph, future lectures, and with a book contract for an official history. Even His Majesty had chipped in. "The king knows that expeditions of this nature require careful and costly preparation," wrote the keeper of the privy purse, Colonel Sir Frederick Ponsonby, to the chair of the Mount Everest.